This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The average credit card debt in Vermont is $9,667, nearly $10,000 just in credit card debt, not to mention student loans, car loans, mortgages, and all the other ways people find themselves spending money they don't have in the bank. Let me give you a couple other statistics. 47% of Vermonters have subprime credit. 34% of Vermont adults live paycheck to paycheck, and 21% spend more than their income. On the plus side, 44% of Vermont adults paid off their credit cards in full over the past year, so not everyone is facing a mounting credit card bill. Given those statistics, though, it's not a stretch to say that financial literacy is very, very important, and it's becoming more common to see it taught in high schools and colleges. But as financial tools have become more complicated, it's important to know good debt from bad debt, to know what affects your credit rating, and to know how to get back on track if you find yourself in the hole. Today on the program, we're going to look at debt and credit. We're joined now by John Pelletier, director of Champlain College's Center for Financial Literacy. He's also one of the principal leaders behind the Vermont Financial Literacy Task Force. John, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you for having me again, Jane.
Let's go through a couple of those statistics that I mentioned. That number, 47% of Vermonters who have subprime credit. Can you just explain what will give somebody some subprime credit?
Yeah, that comes from a report that is from the Corporation for Enterprise Development, or CFED. And it's I wish they were using FICO scores. They're using a different proprietary score from TransUnion, so the numbers are not the same. It can confuse people when you talk about numbers, so I won't.
Okay.
But what that basically is saying is that if you have subprime credit, the credit bureau has determined, based on your actual historical behaviors, that you're not a very good credit risk. There's a likelihood that's higher than other people that you won't be able to pay back that debt. And so once you fall into low credit and subprime credit, when you can get credit, you're going to pay a lot more in interest rate. So whether that's a mortgage, whether that's an automobile loan, or a credit card debt, any revolving debt, they're going to charge you more.
And why is it that people are finding themselves with subprime credit? Is it more likely that they've defaulted on other payments or are paying bills late? Or, you know, what are the factors that are going into that for the majority of people?
Yeah, a lot of it could be for some folks just marginally bad behavior. That could push you down. It could be not paying your bills on time. It could be paying bills late. So, you know, if you have a credit card debt, I think based on one study or survey that I've seen of Vermonters, about 18%, so nearly, you know, one in five, are charged over the last year a late payment fee. And then on top of that, almost another 10% are charged, you know, kind of additional fees for bad credit card behavior. So it could be a late loan payment, a late mortgage payment. Any of those things.
If you have a high balance on your credit card and it's pretty close to the maximum that you have on that card and you're just paying off the minimum every month and so you're not actually working down that debt, is that going to affect your credit score as well?
Yeah. What people don't understand is because a lot of times they'll say, oh, I've got a credit problem. I should get rid of my credit card. That may not be a great thing to do because there's a variety of different factors that go into what's called your FICO score, which is used by 90% of lenders out there. And one of them is your carrying capacity of debt, which is the difference between your total amount of debt. So maybe I have a $5,000 credit line on my credit card and I'm at $4,500 in debt owed. That only leaves me a cushion of $500. That person isn't going to look as good as the person who has only $1,000 of debt on that credit card because their cushion of additional credit is $4,000. So being right up against your credit limit makes you a bad credit risk, not a good one.
So subprime lending on mortgages was, as we now know, one of the biggest contributing factors to the financial crisis of 2008. And we're still, in some ways, coming out of that, and many people are certainly still feeling it. Now it appears that there's a lot of subprime lending on auto loans, and that you think is a problem. Why do lenders in the auto industry feel comfortable lending money to people who are a credit risk, as we've just discussed, in a way that home lenders are now not supposed to and in many cases are not doing?
Right. And a lot of that, so the first question is, why would you even want to give that money? You've got to remember that that money is packaged into securities that's sold in the marketplace. And in a low yield environment right now, you can get higher yield. The other thing is these things can be packaged into AAA securities based on past payment history. So that's another reason why people might be buying them. But most importantly is actual behavior that occurred in the Great Recession. Here's what we know about what people did. We know that the last thing they were going to default on was their automobile loan. They would walk away from their mortgage before their automobile loan, and they would walk away from their credit cards before their automobile loan. And when you think about it, that makes sense, because if that's how you're either going to keep your job or maybe get a new job, that becomes your number one payment that you have to make. So part of the reason more money is being made available is during a horrible collapse and an increase in unemployment. The repayment history on automobile loan for subprime folks was actually pretty darn good.
That's interesting. So it is in some ways a safer bet for the lenders in the auto industry than some other types of loans. But you're also concerned about auto loans that are 84-month loans or very long-term, you know, six, seven-year loans. Why? I mean, that seems like a great way to space it out if you're buying a new car.
Well, the reason for it is you have a long period of time where you're underwater, where you're going to owe more on the vehicle because of the extension of the time period of debt. So that underwater makes it difficult for you if there's the car breaks down or something of that nature to actually pay it back. So let me give you one great example, that Credit Builders Alliance. They estimate that an individual with a pretty good FICO score, which is what I'd recommend, you want a FICO score of about a 720.
Out of a top of 850.
Yeah, out of a top of 850, and the bottom is it's either 300 or 350. I think it's 300, and so pretty wrong range. To get good credit, you want to be around 700, 720, preferably above 720, and so if you assume you have a FICO score of 720, you're going to pay about $4,000 less for a $10,000 loan. That's a 5-year auto loan. So that works out to be about a savings of $67 a month compared to somebody who's subprime with a score of 600. So, you know, you have this big variability, and that gives you an idea of the cost of bad credit, particularly with automobile loans. So someone's getting a nice low rate and someone might be paying 6% more because they have bad credit.
Yeah, and that's a very large number for a $10,000 loan to have the difference be somebody paying $4,000 more over the course of that loan than somebody with good credit.
Oh, absolutely. And so, you know, what people look at when they're buying an automobile, I think they do what I do. You think about, you know, you think about it in terms of what's that monthly payment, what can I afford to pay? But you're not really thinking about how much is the interest rate that I'm paying that's embedded in that monthly payment. It's kind of hidden. They tell you what the APR is, but you maybe don't realize the aggregate dollar amount. And so, you know, if 6 months or a year before you're buying a new automobile or you're looking for a home, if you can improve your credit score, that can pay you, you know, a lot of money. Another example is, you know, on the mortgage side, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau just put up on their website this great site that allows you to literally look at Vermont and what rates are given based on your credit score. So, and you can't go below 620 because you're non-conforming. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac won't buy your loans. So you can't get a loan below 620 credit score. But you could say, here's my credit score. What does that mean for me? And when you look at a $200,000 loan in about 80% loan, so you put 20% down, what you look at is a lifetime payment or a 30-year loan payment of about $50,000, $60,000 more in interest if you have bad credit than if you have good credit. And so people don't realize that you know they're going to pay a lot in interest. But if they focus on improving their credit scores, they're going to reduce how much more they pay.
We're talking today about credit card debt, debts, lending, loans, how much you have in debt. We're interested in hearing about it. if you have maybe close to the $10,000 in average credit card debt for Vermonters, why? What got you to that number? Where do you fall on that list, and how do you manage your debt? Are you struggling just to pay the minimum balance? Are you able to find a way to be disciplined about spending down your debt? Do you have no debt? And maybe that's not the best way to do it. So what's the right average for you, and how are you learning these lessons about credit and debt? You can give us a call and tell us. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. All right, so that number, nearly $10,000 in average credit card debt. Some people have a lot less, some people have a lot more. That's how averages work. We know that.
Yeah.
It seems massive, but it's actually a little bit less than the national average. What's actually contributing to that debt for most Vermonters?
It's hard to know, really. It's hard to know what they're spending it on. The question really is it needs versus wants? Is it things that they have to have, other impulse purchases? Things of that nature. I mean, a great one I use with some of the students is if you go and buy an iPad and you have to have it now. So instead of waiting and saving the $500 or $600 to buy the iPad, you have to have it right now. And you buy it on a credit card that has about an 18% interest payment on it, and you just pay the monthly. And a lot of times the minimum monthly on something as low as $500 could be $20 a month. It will take you by the time you finish paying it off 4 years later, not only has your $500 iPad become like an $800 or $900 iPad, but by the time you pay it off, you need a new iPad because it's going to take you 4 years or 3.5 years. So it depends. If people are paying the minimum, you can see how you can really get into a bad situation, because the minimum, depending on your balance, doesn't even pay the interest. So each month, if you just pay the minimum, you get in trouble. And there's now this box called the Schumer box for Chuck Schumer that's on your credit card bill, and it shows you how long it would take if you just paid that minimum. And those can be pretty scary numbers.
I can see, though, some Vermonters, I mean, it's difficult, as you said, to be able to parse apart the numbers and what they mean. But, you know, in those statistics that I read at the very beginning, 21% of Vermonters are spending more than their income. 34% of Vermonters live paycheck to paycheck. Those aren't necessarily the same people, but
right.
You can see how poverty or feeling like you're very close to the margins might lead you to spend more than you're making. You know, one car repair can send you right over the edge.
Absolutely.
Do you see people just trying to sort of move debt around? So you might have a bill that you need to pay for a car repair, but you're paying for it with a credit card because you don't have the income. I mean, are people doing that, just sort of moving things around without ever actually paying down their debt?
I think I would think the answer to that is yes. There's definitely a portion of our population, probably more significant than we realize, that they have to make these tough choices. And sometimes when it becomes some sort, almost like a death spiral, right? Because you can never pay it off because it keeps growing if you're only paying the minimums with regard to an interest rate like 18%. I mean, even just thinking about 18%, when the federal government can get a 10-year loan through a treasury, right? They borrow from us, we buy the bonds, and they're paying us less than 3%, or actually less than 2% right now. And meanwhile, the banks are charging us 18% on a credit card or more. It could be much more if you have really bad credit ratings. So that's the problem. But they're definitely doing that. The other thing I point out is that $9,000 number is an average of everybody.
Right.
So based on federal statistics I've seen, if you just do the average of people who have credit card debt, it's probably more like $15,000.
Mm.
So because remember, your point was over 40% of people pay off their credit cards
right.
every month in the state, and it's even higher than that. It's over 50% nationally. So the credit card companies aren't making money off of the people who pay off their credit cards every month. They're making their money off of the folks who aren't.
We're talking today about credit and debt. Nearly half of Vermont adults have a subprime credit rating. That affects whether or not they can get a loan and what kind of rates they can get. But it can also have an impact on other parts of their lives. Employers are sometimes looking at the credit history of potential employees before they make a hiring decision. And young people with a lot of student loan debt are postponing home buying, making different job decisions, sometimes even postponing marriage because of the debt burden they carry. You can tell us your story and what lessons you've learned about credit and debt. We're going to answer some of your questions coming right up. Our number is 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We've been talking with John Pelletier, director of Champlain College's Center for Financial Literacy, about the basics of credit ratings and debt, particularly credit card debt. And we're joined now by Stephanie Struble, senior assets manager at Opportunities Credit Union, a nonprofit organization. Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And listeners, while they can't give you detailed financial advice, they are financial educators, not financial advisors. They are eager to share their insight into how to manage credit card debt and to help people avoid some of the pitfalls of others. So if you have a question, you can call 1-800-639-2211 or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Stephanie, before we get into some of the listener questions, let me just ask you, from your position at Opportunities Credit Union, what are people coming in and asking you about? What are the concerns that they have about debt and borrowing when they come in and talk with you?
The majority of the people that we see right now that are coming in are people that are in crisis and in debt and really asking, how do I get out of this? How do I get out of it? How do I be smarter? And how do I get the education that I need that this doesn't happen again? And a lot of them are young adults. Some of them are parents with children who want to educate their children so they're not going through the same financial troubles that they're having right now.
Do you find that people really do have a lack of understanding about these things?
Yeah, it's incredible. But yeah, there is a large lack of understanding. And it's, yeah, I don't think it's uncommon. I think if you were to get a look at a credit card statement and try to understand and read it, it's confusing and it is hard to understand.
Mm-hmm. So is the lack of education or understanding because they're not being taught any of these skills, or because the financial world moves quickly and there are different ways that the lenders are doing things that are confusing to people?
I think it's both. I think it's really difficult for the average consumer to stay on top of all of the regulations. I think that their education in the school system is important. And in the colleges now, I think it's mandatory, should be mandatory. And I think especially even in a younger age, grade school and going forward, teaching your kid to save creates really good habits.